Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Sherry Sweeney. Sherry is a construction engineer, retired. She worked on major construction projects across the United States and abroad for over 30 years. She now resides in Kentucky, where she is building her home and doing organic gardening. Sherry is an advocate for growing your own food, staying away from big pharmaceutical medicine for good health, avoiding GMOs and conventionally grown foods laden with pesticides, and unplugging from today's political system to be as self-sufficient as possible. Sherry advises to start where you are with what you've got and what you can do, but start now. In 1996, Sherry founded the international human rights organization called the Patrick Crusade, which stands for People Aligned to Replace Injustice and Cruelty with Knowledge, which drew millions of visitors from around the world to the cause of prison and court reform in the United States. In 2009, when her husband and best friend, a police officer, pilot, philosopher, and handyman, paid the ultimate price for standing in his integrity against corrupted DOJ officials, Sherry transitioned from prison reform work to searching for the core reasons for this dysfunction, which she saw the tip of the iceberg and only a symptom of a much larger dilemma. This transition is explained in the About section of her website, keyholejourney.com. In 2015, she began working as editor for aerospace engineer Clark McClelland, the Stargate Chronicles website, on the last nine chapters of his book. Sherry is currently working as editor with mental health practitioner Jerry Marzinski. They've been friends and colleagues for 20 years, helping people eliminate the dark side influences from their lives. So without any further ado, Sherry Sweeney, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hi, James, and thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
The pleasure is all ours, and I was really looking forward to this interview with you, Sherry, because Jerry had touched on the clinical aspects of this and what he'd seen from his 30 years of clinical work with patients as well as with prisoners as far as the phenomenon of intrusive thoughts rather than voices is the term that people commonly use. I like how you differentiate between audible voices and these intrusive thoughts because you're someone who managed to divest yourself of these unwanted thoughts. And you saw for yourself how these thoughts strive to manipulate our behavior and our actions. Could you tell us a bit about yourself, Sherry, and how you came to this realization, starting with your childhood?
Yeah, sure. Of course, I had a very ugly childhood. It was very abusive, and that had its consequences later on in life. During I was especially abused by my father, who was enamored by the torture methods of the Japanese. This was during the war, during the World War II. It was just ending. And so he spent a lot of time studying that, and he wanted me to help him out. And I, you know, little kid likes her dad. And I said, sure. You know, well, I didn't know that this was going to be me being the guinea pig for these torture sessions. And so, you know, he put on his white lab coat and his clipboard and did all of these tests. Well, I won't go into the details of what those tests were because they're not something I really want to relive. But during the sessions, I accidentally learned how to leave my body. So, you know, I spent a lot of time out of body while these sessions were going on. And that was my way of getting through this. Well, finally, the social workers came and took me away and took me to a juvenile detention center to stay there. I was a little over 6 years old, almost seven, when all this happened. And so I stayed 6 months at the juvenile detention center with a lot of delinquent teenagers. I was the youngest one in the group. So I got picked on a lot and blamed for everything, of course. And the warden there actually put me in solitary confinement for 2 weeks. So I spent 2 weeks in solitary confinement without bathroom privileges and very scant food, drinking water out of the sink faucet And so that gave me a pretty good idea of what some of our prisoners go through when they're in solitary confinement. And then 6 months later, I was taken to an orphanage, Catholic orphanage. And as I was driving up the, or I wasn't driving, but as I was going up to the entrance there, beautiful, beautiful grounds. And I thought I was in heaven. I mean, this was wonderful. Well, the Catholic orphanages have a really good front. They're really gorgeous. The nuns there are like the flying nuns with the wings on the top of their heads. And I think they call them the Sisters of Charity. Anyway, so I was put into a group of girls that was around my age. And we were all given assignments to help the younger girls. There was 500 girls there. Do certain tasks. And one of the first things that I was assigned to do was to give this little 3-year-old girl a bath. And so I filled up the tub with hot water, and I was getting ready to put some cold water in to get it warm. And this intrusive thought came into my head. It was really all of a sudden, and it was nothing I was thinking of. And the thought was saying things like, you know, just go ahead and put her in the hot water. Don't turn the cold water on. She'll be fine. Just go ahead and put her in. Just do it, do it, do it. And I almost did. I started to lower her down. Her toe touched the hot water. It was just pure hot. And she let out a scream. And I pulled her out and grabbed her. And I cried and she cried. And then I, out of defiance, I felt like I was just being defiant. And I turned on the cold water. And I thought that maybe it was my dad's voice coming to me, or my dad's thoughts coming to me, or some kind of a connection like that. It was awful. And it made me think about, you know, this is something he would do. And it made me think of some of the other stuff that he had done that was really, really torturous. So what I was aware of after that was that these thoughts didn't belong to me. They came from somewhere. I just didn't know what that was all about. And it went on like that all through my growing up years. So, you know, it was just pretty confusing times. I didn't start doing any research on this until I was old enough to do some research on my own. And I had no idea what was going on. So my first attempt at finding out what was happening to me was to read about the brain. How did the brain work? What was that? And that was really interesting stuff, but it was all academic and it didn't really tell me anything at all. It didn't tell me about mind manipulation. It didn't tell me about mind control. It didn't tell me about any of that stuff. So I was lost and I really didn't know where to go from there. And so one day I was in a bookstore and just looking around for books to read, to find out something that would help me figure out what was happening. And this book fell off the shelf right at my feet. And I leaned down to pick it up and put it back. And, but I opened up the page, just, you know, random page. And there was some really what I thought helpful words. So I took the book over to the coffee area and sat there and read for a while to decide if I wanted that book or not. And it was, I think this was in the 70s. And it was a book called Your Erroneous Zones by Wayne Dyer. Never heard of him. And so I decided to go ahead and take the book and read it. I read that book and I can't remember everything that was in there, but I do remember one phrase that was in there that turned my life around. And it was saying that you can have control over what you're thinking. You do have a choice over what you're thinking, and nobody can make you think or feel any way that you don't want to feel. And as weird as it sounds, I didn't know that. I didn't know I had choice. So that kind of is what got me started on this trek.
Now, after having read that, going forward, how was your transition? I don't know if you read that once you got into the workforce or after you'd been in the workforce. How did it go from being a little girl from that abusive background, which thankfully you survived, and becoming a young adult and having to, you know, deal with the aftermath of that?
Well, my life was pretty messed up. I mean, you know, I had a lot of automatic knee-jerk reactions that I did not want to do. I did not understand. I overreacted on a lot of things. You know, people would say innocent things, and I just misunderstood and overreacted according to the way that I had acted as a kid. And so what I've learned since is that from the age of 0 to 6 or 7, a child's brain is in the theta stage, in the theta state. And that's analogous to a hypnosis state. And in that, during that age, and while you're in theta, a child doesn't reason anything. What they do is they take in everything that they see and hear as the truth. And it goes into their subconscious. And it's like a recording. It's just like a tape recorder. And it just plays. And it apparently, from what I've read from a lot of different sources, primarily Bruce Lipton, who talks about this a lot, we live by our subconscious about 95% of the time. And we are only conscious, meaning being here, being aware of where we are and being here now kind of thing, about 5% of the time. So if we're thinking about anything other than right now, we're working on our subconscious in our that 95% of the stuff that got recorded when we were age 0 up to 6 or 7 years old. And so, I mean, there's been a lot of studies on that. And in fact, you know, the Jesuits have said, you know, give me a child when he's until he's 7 and we'll have him for the rest of our lives or his life. So they know this stuff. Well, the dark side knows this stuff too. So everybody goes through this. Everybody goes through this. This we're programmed as young children to into our subconscious. And it's just like a tape recording. You can't go change it unless you rewrite it or unless you erase it. So, you know, it's like any tape recorder, right? And so that takes some doing, and that takes some getting inside yourself and figuring out, you know, what is on that tape. Well, that's kind of where I went, and spent an awful lot of time watching my thoughts, paying attention to the kinds of knee-jerk reactions I was having, even going to the point of stopping myself mid-action or mid-sentence to say to whoever I was talking to, wait a minute, let me just do a redo on that. I'm going in the wrong direction. So for a while there, I probably drove my friends a little crazy trying to, you know, while I was trying to figure out what was recording and what was actually now. So it was a pretty confusing time.
Well, it sounds like you had developed you know, a remedial means to deal with this, because a lot of people are unaware of their own thoughts. And if they're unaware of their own thoughts, they're certainly not going to be aware of these intrusive thoughts that exist outside of them that's trying to work its way in. So the fact that you were able to recognize that, hey, some of these thoughts, especially the, you know, going back to bathing the little girl, that they're not from you, they're from somewhere else. That was a very big start. Now, as you got older, were there times when these intrusive thoughts, say when you were well into your career, would they come up if say you had a decision-making part of some of the corporations and companies you were with? Would there be times of when you're trying to make a decision about something, when hesitancy would kick in, or anxiety or confusion or thoughts would kick in that were kind of detrimental to the whole process? Did anything like that happen?
Oh yeah, it happened all the time, and most of it came in the form of being, you know, I would think things. When I say hear, it wasn't audible voices, and I really need to make that distinction because some people do hear voices, but most people only hear their own thoughts, and they're not their own thoughts. But I would hear things like, you know, you can't trust your own opinions. You're not smart enough to figure this out. You'll never figure this out. So I was bound and determined to do the opposite of that, to see if I could figure it out. I would test myself all the time to see if I could figure something out. That's how I went about it in life, until I knew my own capabilities.
And one of the issues and challenges that people who have had an abusive background, abusive childhood, have to deal with is, you know, trust issues with, and for the benefit of our listeners, the odd sounds in the background are like a heating system or something at Sherry's end. So we really can't do anything about that. So we just got to, you know, slog through it. It won't last for that long. The trust issues, which people develop understandably, because if one's own father, as in your case, would be abusive to you, that has a way of shattering the trust that you may have to develop with someone else, not just in an intimate sense, but in a business sense, a work colleague situation sense. And you made a very good point about the years 0 to 7, where so much of this is imprinted into us for the good or the bad. So how did the concept of developing trust and learning to develop intimacy with people, did that become an issue, and did the thoughts play a role in that as well?
Yeah, part of it was mind control, and the other part of it is the thoughts. The way I'm looking at it is, first I went through this mind control and needed to undo all of that. The thing is, I couldn't talk to anybody about this because I really was afraid that I would get locked up and thrown away into an institution and just drugged half to death or drugged into oblivion. So there wasn't anybody I could trust to tell them what I was going through. And so I didn't have any help from anyone. I had to figure this out on my own through whatever books or studies that I could find. So there's the brainwashing or the mind control that I went through. And I think we all go through the programming. Everybody's programmed one degree or another. And so mine was pretty severe. The message that I got, see, what happened was after the torture sessions, and there I was in a whole bunch of pain or, you know, needed to be stitched up or wrapped up or something like that. Then my father would take me on his lap and tell me that I did such a good job with being his patient, and then he would rock me to sleep. And so what the message I got was, if I want to be loved, first I have to be tortured.
Uh-huh.
And so I kind of went through life like that. And I think that we put out a frequency. I used to call it, you know, it seems like I have a sign on my back that says, kick me, torture me, I'm not worth living, kind of thing. Because I seem to attract those kinds of people into my life. And so I think what happens is when you go through life feeling a certain way, you actually are putting out a frequency, a vibration of what you're thinking and how you're feeling about yourself and the world. And whatever message you got when you were, you know, just a young child in that theta stage. And believe it or not, other people pick up on that who are inclined to do those kinds of things. So the frequencies kind of, you know, attract each other. And the dark side helps as much as they possibly can to get that influence across.
Yes.
So So it's a catch 22. So while I was, during the time that I was not aware of this, life was a mess. But when I did become aware of it, my cat's talking to me in the background. When I did become aware of it, it was a real struggle to make myself see that that's what I was putting out and to get into myself to change that. That was really difficult. Well, I was working at it so hard and so diligently that I think the universe just decided to help me out, because my boss came to me one day and said, you know, we just got a contract to write a particular program for a water district, and would you like to learn how to do computer programming? And I said, yeah, I'd love it. So they sent me to class, and I learned how to do computer programming, and in the process of doing that, I began to realize that, you know, our brains work similar to computer programs in that they can be programmed. They're not like computers, but the fact that the brain can be programmed makes it analogous to a computer programmer, right? Making a computer do what it wants to do. So I started looking at it that way, and I got to thinking, you know, if the mind can be programmed, I wonder if I can rewrite the code that's in there, thinking about it as a computer programmer. And so I worked on that for, over a year, I guess. And I decided that the code in the brain program was just way too complicated to try to rewrite that or edit that. So I decided that, okay, let me do this differently. What if instead of following a program, I decide to not follow that program, but to create a new program and follow that one instead? And the theory was that if I did that enough, maybe the old program would atrophy and no longer work, be like, you know, just shutting it down. And so I worked on that for a couple of years, and it worked. Every time I did that, I had to do it over and over and over again until it became automatic. It's like, it would be like learning how to play the piano. The first time you sit down, you know, you don't know where to go. You don't know where your fingers go. You don't know what the notes are. And you practice and you practice and you practice. And pretty soon, you don't even have to think about it. You know, it looks easy. And same with any kind of instrument. So same with driving a car, you know. So first time you get in a car, you have to learn where everything is. You have to learn how to make it go. You have to learn how to make it stop without, you know, throwing you through the windshield wiper or the windshield. And pretty soon it becomes an automatic thing. So that's what I did with this, working with a brand new program. I wrote it up. Because a lot of people were interested in trying it and working with their own selves. And so I called it the That's a Lie program. Because what I realized along the way is that everything that was ever told to me about who I am is a flat-out lie.
Yes.
So that became the thing that I did. And it took a long time for me to get to the point where it's an automatic thing. And I can tell now, of course, I've been doing this for a long time. I can tell now when a thought doesn't belong to me. It doesn't happen very often now, but every once in a while, something will pop in. It's like, oh, hello, it's you. Yeah. Have a good day. I mean, you know, I don't have any kind of negative reaction toward it at all, because I recognize what it is. That's where I'm hoping everybody can get to at some point.
Well, necessity is the mother of invention, and it's really neat how you intuitively picked up on this. I mean, you had the practical demonstration of how computers work as far as programming is concerned, and then you just translated that into, well, I can reprogram my mind, I can reprogram my brain. Could you give us examples of when you first applied this and how, what effect you got and how you started building on your success?
Yeah, the first time when I, the first thing that I did was, okay, so I'm going to reprogram my brain. I'm going to try a new program. And everything I came up with was really complicated, and I knew I needed to have something that I could remember while I'm in the midst of being attacked by these intrusive thoughts. Because when that's happening to you, first you have to know that that's happening. That's one big, huge step. And then when you do know that that's happening, you have to remember the thing that you have to do to make it stop and make it change, right? And so changing your, reprogramming your mind can be a very complicated thing. So when I realized that everything I'd been told about who I am is a flat out lie, I decided to keep it real short and just say that's a lie. And so I started doing that when I would, get these knee-jerk reaction things that I did, or when I'd start overreacting to something, I would just say, stop, that's a lie. I'm not doing this anymore, I'm doing this. And I would think of something else. And so I had to develop things to think about. And it can be anything. It has to be simple in the beginning. It has to be simple all the way through for it to work really well and quickly. You just have to remember. That's the key, is remembering. Because when you're in the midst of being attacked, you can't remember squat. You're involved in it. You're embroiled in it. This horrible thing is happening to you. These crazy thoughts are going through your head, and you don't know how to stop it. You can even say things like, stop it, I don't want that. Well, that doesn't work. But what does work is say, that's a lie, and start thinking of something else. And it can be anything else. It can be a sunrise. It can be a rose. It can be the love of your dog or your cat, or it can be, listening to some music that you like. It can be taking a walk and looking at nature, and just anytime that foreign thought comes in, just keep on saying it. That's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. When you believe that that's a lie, everything changes. But until you actually know that it's a lie, you just have to keep doing it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it does. And how persistent were these intrusive thoughts once you embarked on this this program of self-program of changing the programming, so to speak?
Yeah, it's very, it gets worse. it really gets worse, because now that I know what these are, and I know that these are what I call dark side entities, at the time when I first started, I didn't know that that's what they were. But now that I know that, I can understand why, they would attack even more than before when you start doing this program. You just have to keep plowing through. And that's because you're getting ready to cut off their food supply. Because when we're in a negative state of any kind, whether it's feeling insecure, whether it's anger, whether it's fear, whether it's, any kind of anxiety, or even when you're in pain, there's a frequency that goes out. It's a negative frequency. These can be measured in the lab now. We have the equipment to do that. So this frequency goes out, and these beings, they're frequency beings, that and the negative is their food. So they don't like the positive energy. They don't like the love energy. They don't like the compassion, energy. But they do enjoy the negative energy. So it doesn't really matter what words you're saying. It's what you're feeling that makes all the difference into what frequency you're putting out. And they know that. So as you start to get into this, that's a lie program to reprogram your brain and use a different part of your brain until it all connects and works automatically, you will get attacked even more than before. You just have to plow through it. And it's not fun, but you just have to be determined.
How would these, did they try anything new on you? Did they try to do things like to make you crash your car, or do they give you bad dreams of crashing cars, or put you in like nighttime dream scenarios where somehow they hack your dreams? Or did it intensify to that level, or was it mostly at a conscious level where the thoughts became more intrusive?
Nothing physical for me. I've heard of it being physical for other people, you know, like crashing cars and things like that. I don't know that they can actually do that. That's a mindset to make you want to crash a car. But I'll tell you what, I have heard, and I've even had this happen to me before, where I'm driving down the road and all of a sudden a thought would pop in that would say, I wonder what would happen if I drove into the oncoming lane.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, well, I'm not doing that. You know, that's really a big lie. And so, I've had other friends even tell me, you know, I had the weirdest thing happen to me. I'm driving down the road, minding my own business. I'm going to go see some friends. I'm going to go grocery shopping or whatever. And all of a sudden I got this thought, you know, what would happen if I drove into the oncoming lane? And I'm wondering, well, where the heck did that come from? So they do that. And it depends on if a person really wants to listen to them or they think they have no control. Maybe that could cause a car crash. I don't know. But they're like, what I've observed is that they're more like robots, programmed robots than anything else. They don't seem to have any capacity for originality or creativity in thoughts. So they keep doing the same thing over and over again. So when they beef up their attacks, they just do the same thing that used to work on you, but more frequently and more intensively. So yeah, they can get into your dreams. They do get into your dreams, and you have to, if you dream something that is, when you wake up, you know whether it's been one of those kinds of dreams where they've infiltrated your dream. And as you keep going along, you get to the point of where you recognize that, and I think they call that lucid dreaming, but I'm not sure. But you recognize that in the dream, and so you may see things going on that you decide that's something I'm not going to be afraid of because it's a lie.
Did you have a point where you realized that, you know, I'm starting to get the upper hand over these beings where, you know, the intensity of the attacks, the frequency of the attacks were starting to back off. And do you remember that moment?
Well, I don't. Yeah, actually, I do remember a particular moment. This is it's over 20 years ago. And I call it my leap of faith day or night. And I was in my apartment by myself, and all kinds of things were you know, going on. I was being attacked royally and, you know, mentally and emotionally, and trying to get to this that's a lie thing going on. And it was really being difficult. And so I decided, and the big thing that was coming to me was, you can't do this because if you do this, we're all going to die. Like, who's
oh.
You know, who's we?
not my problem, pal.
Yeah, not my problem. Okay, you want to die? That's fine. I'm doing it anyway. You know, so screw you. So, yeah, that was my mindset of, you know, I was so determined to do this that and to keep on going. And I was, you know, that was interesting that they were finally getting to that point of, you know, if you do this, we're going to die. And I did actually say out loud, because I was by myself in my apartment, so good thing. And I said, you know, if you're going to die, that's fine with me. I'm going anyway. And then the next thing that was coming to mind was, well, you can't do this because what will everybody else say? They'll just think you're crazy. Like, you know, I'm tired of what other people think. I'm tired of being afraid of what other people think. And I'm doing this anyway.
If yes.
you think if they think I'm crazy, that's up to them, not me, you know. So none of the stuff that they were throwing at me worked anymore. It used to work, and it stopped me from doing a lot of things. You know, I was so other directed prior to all of that, that it was pretty amazing. You know, I couldn't think on my own two feet. You know, I was so afraid of what other people would think. And, you know, you just have to realize that all of that is a lie. That's the programming that you get. And that is what they feed off of.
When you were alone is when you made your most significant strides. When I'm guessing that perhaps when you were with these abusive males that, you know, energetically and through the pre-programming were not only drawn to you, but also sent your way. I'm sure that was a part of it too. I'm sure that when you were around these controlling abusive men that perhaps, you know, the intrusive thoughts intensified, I'm guessing, and it would have made it that much more difficult to implement your That's a Lie program.
Oh, yeah, it was. And because they were like the living embodiment of these thoughts.
Yes.
They would end up saying things out loud that used to pop into my head. And when I finally started noticing that, it's like, wait a minute. Okay, so maybe they're influencing them to act this way toward me. And one of the things that did happen with the people that I was with is when I decided to change my own way of being things and my own way of looking at things, that's when I ended up being in physical danger by them. By the men that I was with. So, you know, it was not fun. But I realized one day, you know, if I don't do this, my spirit's going to die. And I'm not going to let that happen. I'm just not going to let that happen. My body might die and that's fine, but I'm not going to let my spirit die. And so, you know, I just took that leap, took that step. And my, you know, decided that from now on, from this moment on, I'm not going to budge. I'm just going to keep with the That's a Lie program, no matter what happens, no matter what anybody says. And so that's the kind of diligence that a person needs to do when they're being severely attacked.
Did you notice that once you began to see success with the That's a Lie program, and after you'd detached from some of these controlling, abusive men who seem to be under the malign influence of these entities that were behind these intrusive thoughts, did you notice that you just weren't meeting these kinds of men anymore?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have to back up and just say that one of the things that I got to, one of the states of mind that I got to, was realizing that, okay, I've done the That's a Lie program and it's worked. And I'm no longer being bombarded by these intrusive thoughts. And now when these intrusive thoughts come, I need to send them a love energy. Not that I love them, like a romantic love, or not that I approve of what they're doing, but it's more like a cosmic love.
Mm-hmm.
It's a frequency. And what I noticed when I did that, all I said was, you know, I send you love. Vanish. Immediately. They vanish immediately. They cannot stick around with that. So apparently it's a poison to them or something.
Yes, I've heard of similar techniques. I've blessed negative entities in my presence, first in my thoughts, and then when I could break the paralysis, because I would just keep thinking, bless you, bless you, bless you. And if I had the ability to formulate a smile, you know, break the paralysis enough to make a physical smile, however slight, and then if I could visualize a pink glow emanating from my heart center, just filling up the whole room all the time, just putting out the bless you, bless you, bless you message and really mean it, I can sometimes get them to back off long enough for the paralysis to break. And then I'm turning on the light and I'm walking around the room or the house and I'm still saying out loud now, because the paralysis is broke, bless you. And I really mean it. I want them you know, I want them to have the opportunity to get off the treadmill and continue their spiritual journey or not. You know, I don't really want them to back off, but it would be added bonus if they took the hint and, you know, just change their ways. So I can relate to the I send you love message that you sent to them and how in some cases it seems like it's like kryptonite to them.
It is like kryptonite to them. And I agree with you that if there's some way to get them off that treadmill, that would be wonderful. It'd be good for them, really good for us. But you know, if they're not going to do that, then we need to starve them.
Yes.
You know, so they can either here's their options as far as I'm concerned. They can, we can put out the love energy. We can tell them we recognize who they are and that all of this is a lie, and starve them. Or, you know, if they're feeling starved, they can leave, or they can get off the treadmill and realize that they don't have to have negative energy for food. They get plenty of energy from the universe without taking it from anybody else.
Yes. Yes.
You know, they don't need anybody else to feed. It's not, it, you know, they're acting. I don't look at them anymore as evil. And that's because to me, they're so robotic and they're more like some critter that's acting instinctually, like a flea or a mosquito. Or, you know, a leech. They don't attack you because they hate you. You know, they attack you because you smell good.
Yes.
And so there's no malevolence in them, in those critters, those insect critters, for doing that. And so now I'm looking at these entities more along those lines.
Yes, because I've seen this with certain types of non-human entities where they do things by rote, Sherry. They tend to do things that have worked for them on other people in the past. And it's kind of like a broken record syndrome for you over 40s out there that remember the vinyl LPs, where they would just be the skip and the same thing would play over and over because I guess they've gotten such good results from their standpoint off others in the past that they're just going to keep trying it on you, for example, or for me. And then when it doesn't work, they just move on, you know, to greener pastures.
Yeah, and I've even had them when something doesn't work with me that used to work with me, they come back with the same thing again and again and again. You know, it's kind of like, to me, it's like a Monty Python sketch, you know, that's, you know, terrifically ridiculous.
And yeah, so, like the abuse office, you know, where you just, someone walks in and just starts screaming at you and, yeah, I know what you mean. Now, one of the problems that people have when they're dealing with these intrusive thoughts is that sometimes these intrusive thoughts try to goad or otherwise influence them into getting involved with substance abuse, whether it's pill popping, pharmaceuticals, whether it's alcohol, drug, illicit drug abuse. Did they try that technique on you? They try to guide you in that direction?
Well, sort of. I mean, I didn't get into drugs in an abusive way, although I did experiment with several different kinds of drugs, and I didn't really like them. And so thankfully I didn't get into that. But they were introduced to me, you know, saying, oh, this is great, you got to try it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I'd say, okay, fine, you know, and I'd try it. And then it's like, okay, so I don't really like this. And so I didn't go any further with it. So I'm really blessed that way. And I'm very, very thankful that that's what happened to me, because I know that doesn't happen to everybody. And so, you know, that just didn't happen. I liked marijuana a lot. And, but I never did. I didn't have it enough to really get hooked on it. And I don't think you can get hooked on it anyway. And I really appreciate that plant because of all the wonderful things that it can do for people. I mean,
yes.
we have actual receptors in our body that are designed to take that in and heal.
Yes, and there's no denying the healing properties of that plant, which is why they go to such strenuous efforts to make it illegal and make it difficult for people who want to use it as a healing modality.
Yeah, I mean, we have a guy in the White House right now who used to be the Attorney General for Alabama. And, you know, he's really off of his rocker for wanting to take the medical marijuana away from little children that need it for their chronic asthma, their attacks. And so their epilepsy and so on like that, and it is working. And it's not the kind that has the THC in it. And so, but he still wants to take that away from them. I mean, that's really Jeff Sessions. That's the guy who's really bonkers as far as I'm concerned.
You know? Yes, definitely. Yeah,
he was like that in Alabama too. So, you know, he just took it with him to the White House. But see, what we're dealing with is a frequency war. You know, everything is a frequency. You know,
absolutely,
that.
Yeah.
Thoughts are frequencies, feelings are frequencies, emotions are frequencies, life itself is a frequency. And perception is the real key to everything. And like David Icke talks about how our perception is being hacked. I agree with that.
Oh yeah, it's the consciousness is being muted and hacked constantly.
Yeah, so it's our perception. Like, if you want to think of these entities as evil, well, there's going to be a fear factor in there for thinking that. And so that's why I think it's important to call them out as liars, realize that they're lying to you, and then actually get to the point where you can send them that cosmic love. There's no fear in that, and there's no negative frequency in that. So you're not interesting to them anymore. They, you know, they have no power of their own. The only power they have is the power that they get from us. But they have to trick us into doing that. And that's another thing I want to get into later on is we are such powerful beings. And we've been programmed to not even know that. And there's more and more people realizing that, which I think is wonderful.
Well, please get into that right now, because I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, well, we are such powerful beings. We've been programmed to not realize this at all. I mean, back in the 1940s, when scientists realized, for example, that just observing a lab test changes the results, right?
Yes.
So that was one of the most powerful things that about humans. You know, just observing something changes the characteristic of the outcome. Well, how powerful is that? And they wanted to hide that from people. There was no way that was going to be big headline news, you know, because we've got a planet full of gatekeepers here that are doing everything they can to keep us from knowing this stuff.
Yeah, and just to interject for a second, it's why they created the term placebo, because in these clinical trials, people were literally healing themselves off sugar capsules, and you know, they didn't want that to get out, so they came up with something that deliberately obfuscate the fact that we are self-healers by calling it the placebo effect.
Yes, and even the ancient documents, even the Christian Bible talks about how I don't remember the exact words of one of the phrases, but it's something like, look at things that are not as though they are, and they'll come to pass, and they will be. So there's a lot of people out there now talking about how, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. It should be, I'll see it when I believe it.
Yes.
You know, so that's another indication of just how powerful we are as human beings. And so the way I'm seeing this is now, if we're that powerful, it's no wonder that they're having to throw all this stuff at us. You know, planet has to be poisoned. We have to go to war. We have to program everybody to not know who they are. We have to poison their food. We have to poison their water. We have to tell them that if they're getting intrusive thoughts or they're hearing voices, that they're crazy. We have to drug them. we have to come up with all these religious dogmas. We have to do everything we can to keep them in this box so that they won't find out just how powerful they really are. Because if they ever did, we're out of business.
Yeah, it would be game over. And it just shows the, you know, the scale and the depth of their efforts means that at some level they must be terrified of us.
Well, I think they are. And the people who don't realize this, you know, they're going along with the program. They're thinking that it's real. They're thinking that, you know, they are what their life is, and that's all there is. They you know, scientists are a good one for that. You know, if it's they're in the material world, hook, line, and sinker, and thank goodness that more and more scientists are starting to come out of that because they're realizing, you know, science only goes so far. And when you get to the end of that, where do you go? Do you just stop and say, okay, we're done? Science is finished? No. You have to keep going on to the unseen world. And when you get into that unseen world and you really start to get into it, you realize that, you know, well, in the first place, our eyes, our physical eyes, only see a teeny tiny percentage of reality.
Absolutely.
You know, there's so much more reality out there that we don't see. And that we have to get out there. We have to realize that that's the truth. So we have to go beyond our physical eyesight. We have to get in touch with our emotions and our feelings, because those are frequencies that are going out to the whole universe. So the gatekeepers know this. The entities know this. The physical gatekeepers, like the psychiatrists that Jerry talks about, or the prison system that I know about, they're just as stuck in the 3D physical world as anybody else. But the ones that are influencing them, they know all this stuff. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I see is this feedback loop begins to grow upon itself, and how they try to instill. You already talked about the first several years, the formative years of our lives, and how we're so subjected to all kinds of stuff, hammered by the medical field, hammered by the schools, the indoctrination in the schools. And then as we get older and become, it's not so much a question of us becoming more aware. I'm looking at it from the perspective of younger people today, millennials and Generation Xers before them, whatever they're called, where they don't have a frame of reference, Sherry. All they know is wars. All they know is these rampaging epidemics that are breaking out all over the place. All they know is terrorism. All they know is, oh, another flu outbreak. You got to get your flu shot. So they're constantly hammered. And the common denominator is fear, fear, fear. Keep looking to the system for help, for handouts. And when we get into that stage where every thought, every action, every course of acts we take is predicated on this need to alleviate this fear, that everything is done to make us less fearful and make us feel more safe, it'll have that cyclic effect of just plugging us in further and further and further, because that's where these intrusive thoughts really come into their own, I believe, because the media, the drumbeat way they keep hammering the same messages over and over, it instills these OCD thought loops. And the way the media and the way the cinema operate also, they operate in sound bites, in slogans, in endless repetition. So more than ever, we need to detach from that and really begin to get in our own space, get out of our headspace, and be grounded. And so I can see how in your progression, Sherry, that took you full circle back to nature. It took you back to working with plants and gardening and becoming one with the environment and grounding yourself in a very big way.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we can't expect all humans on this planet to make that kind of full circle. they're not remembering who they are, and the society, the system, the establishment, whatever you want to call it, is doing everything possible to keep everyone from remembering all those things that we are. And so the tricks that they're playing are horrendous. I mean, some of them are just, they're everywhere from subtle to grotesque. And this is all, these establishments are, they're influenced, as far as I can tell. They're influenced because they're not remembering who they are either.
Yes.
So they're influenced by this, these entities, these invisible entities. We can call them dark side entities for now, because that's where they live. So they're influenced by these dark side entities to forget who they are too, to not remember who they are. We want to make sure this establishment doesn't know who they are, because as soon as they start remembering who they are, they're not going to be dishing out all the baloney that's going on, all the lies that the young people who are between these ages of 0 to 6 or 7 years old, working in the theta hypnotic brain state, they can't know the difference as in that state. They only know their tape recorder is just recording everything that they're seeing and everything that they're hearing and everything that they're feeling. And so by the time they grow up, or by the time they become teenagers and start to use different states of mind, they're already programmed. So that's the rub. I mean, that's the hard thing to get over. And I want everybody to know that, because it's a difficult thing to overcome. You know, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to change. I've seen a lot of people do this, and I've done it myself, where, oh, I'm going to change, and tomorrow or even tonight, I'm going to be different. Well, it doesn't work that way. You know, this is a computer. This is analogous to a computer program. And so you have to really work consistently at it. You don't even have to believe it to begin with, because you just have to start telling the subconscious, talking to the subconscious, having a lot of self-talk. I need a drink of water just a minute. Having a lot of self-talk to convince that program that what it's playing is not true. And it has to be over and over and over again.
Well, you've proven, Sherry, that it works. And all one winner needs to know is that another winner did it first. So you've blazed the trail for people to follow. I've seen the insidious effects of these voices. I've had people in my extended family that were constantly talking to themselves, and they would just have a flash of anger because some random intrusive thought would come in. Not really random, but some intrusive thought would come in, and it would set them off, you know, and they would have a physical reaction from it. Mm-hmm. And they would seem to be sitting there berating themselves or telling the voice or whatever to shut up. So I've seen for myself how this process of wearing a person down, breaking them down until they're basically opened up, and the entities basically take over that person and basically guide that person's destiny to wherever these entities want to take it. Well, we've reached the end of a fascinating first half, Sherry. Can you give us your website?
Yes, it's www.keyholejourney.com. And everything that we're talking about, there's a whole bunch of topics there. Just click on the topics link, and there'll be a whole list of different topics that you can research yourself.
We've reached the end of the first segment with Sherry Sweeney. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour.